all things continually lead back to serpents, dragons, fairies, Nephilim, and fallen angels.
In the distance looms a mystical mountain.
As Mike Heiser used to say, if it's in the Bible and it's weird, it's probably important.
At its peak, a great fire burns, concealing the Prometheus lens.
This development of this knowledge that's being talked about within the mystery schools.
An ancient artifact said to reveal the hidden truth within a deliberately darkened world.
There's a hidden history that's been deliberately obfuscated from the peoples of the world.
Join us as we travel and explore the vast unknown. It's a hero's journey with dragons to slay, damsels to save, and innumerable treasures to hoard. Torches high.
The Smithsonian, they'd caught wind of a giant skeleton. They would send their agents out to get it.
But it takes courage to move forward, to move out of the shadows, out of the unreality that we think of as reality.
We are all on the hero's journey.
Mankind has been in contact with and influenced by extraterrestrials.
Leave the Sitchin mound of bull feathers out of it.
You know, look at it from a different perspective. A different perspective. Different perspective.
Hey, Jason. For real.
Yes, sir.
Yep. Give us another look of your lab coat. Yes.
At the Smithsonian, basically.
Coming to you live from the Smithsonian. Jason.
That's funny.
Well, what is happening? What is up? Hold out your glass because we are about to fill it up. Welcome to the Prometheus Lens Podcast, the place where the conversations are always enlightening. And I'm your host, Justin. And here we use the allegory of the Prometheus Lens to take a second look at everything. Well, today we have another Q&A, and it's funny because it's like, man, we were just here, weren't we, Jason? And now here we are again the very next Saturday, so we get a double dose.
Here you
a lot
go.
Of times,
yep.
we're at the mercy of all these great researchers and authors and stuff and their schedule. And man, Andrew, I just really appreciate your time, especially where you're at. You're in Greece now, and it's 2 a.m., but you're toughing it out to be here with us, so I really appreciate it.
More than happy to be here. Thank you. I think we've done this 3 or 4 times. Not the Q&As, but the podcast interviews, so happy to be back.
Yeah, we had you, because I actually found you through actually Trey Smith, our mutual friend.
Yes.
From God in a Nutshell. And he was in the middle of editing and actually recording, because he hadn't had your footage yet of his the Joseph documentary. And me and him was talking on the phone, and he's like, man, I found this guy, and he's out there in the Middle East, and he's got some connections, and he says he can get me some footage from inside of Pharaoh such and such as tomb.
Yeah, that was who was that? That was the third, I think. That was the third or fourth tomb I went and filmed for him last May, about a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
And within he asked me, it was like 2 week notice, and I worked it out with our local contacts, and they got the permit, and I was off to Egypt to film it.
And that's what he was saying. He was like, man, he said, these tombs have been closed to the public for like over 10 years. He said, I'm stoked. He said, and there's rumors that there's a mural on the wall that shows the parting of the Red Sea. And I'm like, dude, that's amazing.
Yeah, they have in the main burial chamber where the sarcophagus is, on the wall are these hieroglyphs. And there's a painting that kind of goes along the bottom section. And it's like a river. I mean, you can say it's like a body of water, and they have these dead bodies kind of floating in it. And so some have interpreted that to be representation of the Red Sea crossing. It's quite interesting being down in there.
Yeah, I mean, that's just wild. So yeah, he was talking to me, you know, about you, and then and I said, well, who is this guy, you know? And then he told me your name, and I was like, well, man, I said, if you don't mind, I might reach out to him, see if he'll talk to me. He's like, yeah, man, go ahead. Yeah, I'm sure he will. Andrew's a really nice guy and real knowledgeable. And then at this point, I didn't even know that you were associated, you know, like with, you know, carrying on the torch of Ron Wyatt. And then he had mentioned, he was like, yeah, he said, and he works at the Dupinar site in Turkey and leads tours over there through the Exodus and the Red Sea. And he, you know, he follows up on a lot of Ron's stuff. And I'm like, dude, yes, yeah. I definitely want to talk to this guy.
Yeah, I can't believe it's only been a year we've been doing this.
Yeah.
It's been great.
The first time we talked, we dove into the Dupinar site.
We did two episodes on that, I think.
Yeah, and then you did us a whole presentation on the scans and all the scans and stuff.
But you said there's two more. I'm trying to remember. The others were on the Red Sea, or what was the other?
Yeah, we had two more, and spoiler alert for the All Access Pass holders that will see this later. We did the another presentation of the Exodus route and the Red Sea crossing, and then we cut that, but we kept going, and then you took us all the way to Mount Sinai.
Oh, that was the day. That's
pictures,
right. I was
maps,
in Switzerland.
Videos.
I think I was in Switzerland, and that was the session we did that went for like 4 hours or something. It was a long one, the record. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I remember I was like, you know, if you need to go, Andrew, he was like, oh, no, I'm fine. We'll just get it all done. I'm like, sweet. If you're willing to talk, I'll sit here and listen, man. It was
I was hoarse for a couple of days. I remember that.
Well, I definitely appreciate it, and I know the guys and gals, when they watch it, will be very thankful, too. That was great for people like us. You know, I say that. I hope one day make it out there and see those things with my own eyes, but a lot of us won't, so you took us there digitally.
Yeah, I love sharing, whether it's on the internet or having people on the tours. Especially, you know, obviously, when you're there the first time yourself, it's like seeing the Split Rock or Noah's Ark. It's an emotional thing seeing these sites that are associated with these, you know, big biblical events. I've seen people cry or just start praying. And yeah, it's just like, remember my first trip out here. I was in college when I went to the Drepanar site. And it's that whole 4 or 5 days I was here with a friend, my first time in Turkey. And it just felt like you're on this big adventure. You know, Ron Wyatt was still alive too at that time, and he gave us some material to bring over to put up in the visitor center. It's just, it brings back a lot of memories.
Well, for those that didn't catch our first interaction, and I'd actually like to take a deeper dive with it, but how exactly did you get exposed to Ron Wyatt's work, and talk about how you got involved with his work and actually got to meet Ron and know him personally?
Yeah, I was just a kid. He had come out to California, and I forget how I knew about his meeting. Maybe it was like an ad in the newspaper. This was 1990 or 1991, and I was a teenager in middle school, and it was a Thursday night, so it was kind of, instead of a weekend, he was coming out like a school night. And I had homework to do, and I asked my father if he could go hear this guy and see what he says and like write down all the notes and come back and tell me. And so he agreed to do that. And he came back and said, hey, this guy said he's found Noah's Ark, the Red Sea crossing, you know, all these things. And so I had to find out more information, you know, it got me really intrigued. And so I found out he had written a little book called Discover Noah's Ark, and it was in the local bookstore. So I bought it and I read it. It was a very small book. So I had a lot of questions. Again, I was just a kid. And so I decided to call the operator to get Ron's phone number. And so this was before the internet. Yeah. And I didn't tell my parents I was going to do this. So I just called 411 and I asked for Ronald Wyatt from Madison, Tennessee. He had a P.O. box in his name, you know, listed in the cover of the book. But they found a number for Ron Wyatt and they said, okay, we'll dial it for you. And so they dialed it and he answered. And he said, I just got back to the Middle East. Call me tomorrow. He said, I'm just walking in the door. So I caught him as he was just coming back from one of his expeditions. And so I was so excited. I was nervous. So I was so excited. And I would record all my conversation. I didn't tell him. So it was probably illegal. But I bought a tape recorder and I would type up and write up all the, well, we didn't have a computer back then. So I'd actually write, I had like a notepad. I would write up like a transcript of, until we got computers, but, of what he said. And I'd just keep these notes. I was just so into it. And, I wish I kept all the recordings, but because it, you know, cost money for each tape, I'd reuse the tapes. So I have a couple of the old tapes left, but everything, most of them are gone. But yeah, there's always things like, oh, I wish I would ask Ron this or that. And because he passed away. But, I was, you know, so I was like 90, 90, 91. And then up until 95, I would, you know, talk to him a lot on the phone. I'd call him, annoy them probably, and just ask a lot of questions. And then finally, I found some friends who wanted to help pay for his trip. And we invited him out to California to do a weekend meeting. excuse me. And so he came out for a weekend in 95 and in 96. And so that's how I've met him twice then. And then in 97, I was supposed to go with him. A friend of mine who used to go with him a lot, asked Ron if I could come with them on their next expedition. And Ron said, sure. And he was going to open, this is really interesting. Most people don't know this, but Ron believed he had found a hidden chamber in the Great Pyramid. And he had this electronic equipment. What he had noticed, he said, was this, there's a place in the, I'm not a pyramid expert. I think it's whatever the big room, the Grand Gallery, whatever that big room you come into. He had noticed that there's this, I think, if I remember, my friend who talked to Ron about this more than what Ron told me, but there's like a crack or an edge that had like fresh air or something coming through. But he noticed some type of fungus or algae growing or some discoloration of the rocks. And Ron, he believed that, plus with his electronic equipment, he believed that there was a chamber behind there and that it was reading like there was gold deposits. So he thought it was full of treasure. And his plan was in 1997, he personally knew the director of antiquities at that time. They have a new guy now, but in 97, so this guy was going to give them permission. I was going to be part of that team. They were going to go in there and try to open up this chamber. And what happened, I think this was the fall of that year. They had a huge, sadly, a huge terrorist attack down in Luxor. It killed like 50 foreign tourists. And so the, obviously his friend, who was the head of antiquities, was really busy, never got back to Ron. And Ron never attempted. So this was 97. He passed away, you know, a year and a half later. But he never attempted to go back to like 98 or something like that. So I always wondered, like, okay, well, if we would have gone on that trip, like, what would we have found? Like, would he have found, like, was it a chamber full of treasure? And it's really interesting, though, that the pyramid's been in the news the last couple of years because they're using these, what are these detectors that can find these particles. And this, the Japanese are using it. And they're even using it in Jerusalem now to detect voids. Like muons or I forget, it's some type of particle that's invisible, but it goes through matter. Like we're like right now, it's going right through our bodies, these particles from the sun. And so, detector, they had it in the news last year. It had found a huge void parallel to that. I think it was the Grand Gallery, whatever that chamber is called, the big one in there. And so they found, it's reading it. There's a big void there. And it's in the general area that Ron Wyatt back in the 90s said his equipment was pinpointing a chamber. So I don't know. Like these scientists think there's something there. And now they got to figure out what it is and how to get to it. And, you know, maybe put a little camera in there. But that was 97. So that was a year after I met Ron the second time. But instead of going to Egypt with him, because that didn't work out, I went to Noah's Ark. And that was my first time to Turkey. And seeing the Ark site, and that got me really excited. And that's, I'm not there right now, but I was there a couple of days ago. And so, yeah, that's kind of my base now. Where Noah's Ark
and that's
is.
Awesome. So, that's what I love about these conversations. You know, we would never know that stuff, you know. So you heard it here.
There's so many stories about Ron.
They have discovered a secret chamber.
Yeah, and now the scientists today, they're finding the same chamber probably. So it's a crazy.
So is it determined that that's Noah's Ark resting place? Like, you know, because like for the last 20 years, you saw like on History Discovery Channel, like we think we might have found, you know, the gopher wood of Noah's Ark, and then it was never conclusive. But is that like, have they found it, or is that just?
I believe this is the best candidate. So that, I guess the site you were talking about is the one that looks like a boat, you know, boat shape. That's called the Drupanar site. Yeah. So that was first discovered in 1959 by a Turkish military captain. He was mapping out this part of Turkey. You know, Turkey's part of NATO. And so back in the 50s and 60s, you know, we had the Cold War going on. And Turkey wanted to map out their border because they bordered the Soviet Union at that time, which would be Armenia and those you know, former republics of the Soviet Union. And so anyways, this area along this remote border with Iran and Armenia now, they were mapping out. And so they were flying high-altitude military aircraft, taking all these pictures across the countryside. And this one guy who was a cartographer for the Turkish military, he spotted this boat shape. And it just jumped out at him. Like, he's never seen something like that before in this area. And he was like, what does this look like? A shipwreck on the side of a mountain. You know, this perfect boat shape. It has, you know, it looks like it has the pointed end for the bow. And then you see the stern of it. And anyways, and he found it on the date was September 11, 1959. And a week later, it was announced in the news. So whatever that is, September 17th or whatever, 18, it actually hit the press. No photos. But then a month later, in October, the Turkish military actually released the photograph. And then that was published around the world. And so that got a lot of people interested. And so an American expedition came out there the next summer, in June of 1960. And they hooked up with the Turkish military and with Captain Drupanar, the guy who discovered the site, and they went out there and they found the actual, you know, boat shape in the mud flow.
My name's Nick. I'm the owner of Kevlar Joe's and I'm the roaster. I'm an Air Force Security Forces veteran, a dad to three wild boys, and a husband to my wife, Crystal, and a coffee enthusiast. From a family in a small town in Missouri, we started with the simple idea of crafting a perfectly bold cup of coffee. Inspired by wellness and countless pots of stale coffee while deployed, we wanted to craft a bold, clean, and smooth coffee. So we did, and we realized we wanted to share this coffee with our friends. Lord knows we could all use a good cup of coffee right about now. From the farm to your coffee cup, there's nothing like a good, well-crafted, and bold cup of coffee. No matter what time of the day, it's there to pick you up, motivate you, and relax you. We hope you enjoy our coffee. Be bold, be humble, be Kevlar. And you can find Kevlar Joe's Coffee Company anytime you want at www.kevlarjoe.com. Enjoy.
Hey guys, if you enjoyed that episode, I encourage you to head on over to PrometheusLensPodcast.com and sign up for our All Access Pass. It's $10 a month. It comes at the 33 cents a day. It gets you 48-hour early access to all episodes, members-only episodes, access to the private community, and that comes with monthly Q&As and member chats. So we talk with authors and other great speakers, and you guys get to ask them your questions every single month. We also offer a smaller tier package that is just $4 a month, and with that, that gets you access to the 48-hour early access, the monthly chats, and the Q&As. The only thing that does not get you is the members-only episodes like the one you just saw. But if you enjoyed that, head on over, sign up, it's quick, it's easy, and get access to not only this episode that you just saw, but many, many other great exclusive content. Torches high.